Today, I want to talk about the relationship between three apparently very distinct things, but that come together in a very interesting way in the case of these models like the toric code. And they are, so indeed, this notion that we are exploring the epistemological order. The second notion is entanglement. And the third one, it is, let me call it memory. Okay, so we have our toric code, okay? So let me write again the Hamiltonian. And again, the definition of our local operators. What have we learned? What are the features that so far we have understood? Okay, so first of all, we have a gap. Okay. Second, we've seen we have a degenerate ground state. So the dimension of LGS, so this is the space that is the ground state, is equal 4 to the G. And this is the genus of the Riemann surface. Third thing, so we have seen it in the gauge theory, but now we have to briefly see it again, that the degeneracy is robust. So the proof is essentially the same, just worth mentioning it again, because I want to make clear that this robustness does not depend on the gauge structure. Okay? So imagine that we have a perturbation epsilon b, okay, to our toric code. And I want to compute the splitting between different ground states. Okay. So we know from the degenerate perturbation theory that we have to compute the matrix elements of between psi 0 and the other state, so psi 0, let's say 1, and psi 0, 2. Of our perturbation at some order in perturbation theory. Okay? This is what we have to do. And when they are zero, they don't contribute to our splitting. And the first ones that are non-zero will be the leading order in the expression for the splitting. Okay? Now remember that psi 0, 2 can be obtained by acting with one of these big loop operators on psi 0, 1. Right? So this expression becomes psi 0, 1 epsilon v to the n w 1 x psi 0, 1. Okay? So this expectation value is zero unless this v to the n contains w1x. If it doesn't contain w1x, then I cannot annihilate this thing. And if I have any sigma x operator between such two states, the expectation value is zero, because the expectation value of any of such operators is zero. Okay. So this can be different from zero if and only if n times r, where r is the locality, r is the locality of v, is equal to the length of w1, which is l. Okay? So for instance, if v is a one-body perturbation, then I need to pile at least L of them to create this operator, at least. If it is a two-body operators, I need to pile at least L over 2 of them, and so on and so forth. So this implies that this thing happens at the L over R order in perturbation theory. I mean, we don't even know if it happens. It cannot happen before then. So this implies that the splitting is smaller than epsilon to the L over R, which is, because epsilon is supposed to be a perturbation, is e to the minus L over some length that depends on the other constant, simply. Okay? So as you can see, the robustness does not use the gauge structure. It only uses this property that the expectation value of open strings is zero in the ground state. So the degeneracy is robust. So since we cannot tunnel between one state and the other, okay, so the correlation functions for the ground state vector code are identically zero, unless I do the correlation function of a loop. But all the things that have open ends have correlation functions zero, exactly for the same reason. They are open strings. They are zero in the ground state. There are no open strings in the ground state. If I perturb a little, we don't know, right? But as long as I am in the large system, I am stuck in one of the sectors, wherever I start with. So I cannot tunnel. So I can treat the system as if the ground state were unique. Then there is a gap. And then we have that, in general, correlation functions, because it's as if there was a unique ground state and there is a gap, they must decay exponentially. Where this is the correlation length that is induced by the perturbation. Without perturbation, the correlation length is exactly zero. So even unless A and B touch each other, it is zero, any correlation function. Okay, then we have emergent fermions. We saw it last time. And now I want to show two other properties, okay? So let me name here 6 different ground states are identical locally. So this means that their difference is really topological. It is true that we showed that to go from one to the other, we need a topological operator. But does it imply that then I cannot distinguish them locally? I mean, that, is it necessary, the fact that we need a topological operator to go from one to the other? So I will show that if you look at them locally, they're completely indistinguishable. And let me add, in every basis, so this is important for a reason that I will show in a second. It has profound consequences. Seven, the entanglement is, let me say, long-ranged. And I will explain what I mean. Okay, so these are, yes?
When you say the entanglement is of the ground state?
Yeah.
But if the ground state is degenerate, how do I know that every possible representative of that space has the same entanglement?
I'll show you. Okay. It's a consequence of this.
But that doesn't depend on the partition that I make?
Yes. In fact, they are identical locally. So it depends what I mean by locally. So by locally, I mean something that does not see the topology of the space. Okay? So let's do it. Okay, by locally I mean this. We are on a torus, and I want to look at my state on a patch. Okay, so this patch must be local, so it means that I can make it big, but it should be also small. So it must be contractible. If I take a patch that goes around the torus, that for sure is not local, right? It's very big in the thermodynamically, it is very big. So a patch is something like this. Okay? So this is my A, and this is my B. Okay? So I want to look at the system on A. So what does it mean, I want to look at my system on A? That I have my state psi 0, so now I will use two states, psi 0, 1. So the one without strings, I was calling it psi 0, 0, right? And the one with one loop, I was calling it psi 0, 1. Okay. So I have these two states, and I want to make measurements in these two states of observables that only have support on A, right? So I want to make compute expectation values of this type, psi 0, 0, on some observable that has, this is what it means to have support on A, right? It's the identity, it's trivial on B, and it's non-trivial on A. And, well, you know that this is like taking, so that this is the trace over the whole Hilbert space AB. So we saw in one of the lectures that this is like taking the trace just over A of psi 0, 0 on A and OA, where psi 0, 0 on A is the trace over B of the total one. Right? You guys agree? Okay. So let me call this value OA of 0. And so this is the type of things that I want to do. So you see, all the results, all the outcomes or measurements that I make on such an operator, they are all encoded in this state, in the reduced density matrix. That is the density matrix obtained by starting from the initial density matrix and tracing out to B. Of course, this is a density matrix, so what I mean is this. It's the matrix associated to that state. Okay. So what I want to show now is that this object, so theorem psi0a that is defined like this, is identical to psi1a. I want to prove it. So this means that no matter what I measure on this patch, I don't know where I am. So I don't know if I am in 0, in 1, or I don't know if I am in any superposition of them, and so on and so forth. Moreover, to answer your question, because the entanglement only depends on the reduced density matrix, this also means that the entanglement, as long as my bipartition is made in this way, will not see where I am. Okay? So before I prove it, let me first make a note aside. Why I want to say this is true in every basis and not in a particular basis. So let me use this patch to show this. Imagine I am in the symmetric state of a system with symmetry breaking. So, namely, I am in the state that has all spins up plus all spins down. Okay? So, and I consider these two states. The symmetric one and the anti-symmetric one. Okay. So this is a basis for the ground state, the degenerate ground state of the Ising model when there is symmetry break, right? So I could choose the basis all spins up and all spins down, or I could choose this basis here. The reason why when we study quantum phase transitions, we always think of the basis all spins up and all spins down is because we want to highlight the fact that we have spontaneous symmetry breaking. That means that when we actually realize the system will spontaneously choose one of those two states in that basis. It will not go in one of these two. These are fragile. Big Schrödinger's cats. However, mathematically, we can think about them, right? So if you, very simple exercise, compute the reduced density matrix, tracing all spins but one in the two states, and you will see that in both cases, you find one up, one up. So also these two states are distinct topologically. But this doesn't mean that every state in the ground space manifold is distinct. Every pair of orthogonal states are distinct topologically. In fact, if you take this pair, all spins up and all spins down, the two reduced density matrices are completely different. One is 1, 0, the other one is 0, 1. So this happens for a fine-tuned choice of the basis. So it is not the full thing, okay? So, but here what we will prove is complete. You see, I've just taken two orthogonal states. I didn't tell you which ones. All I know is that they are related one to the other by the operator W. Yeah? Right? Because this is what creates orthogonal states. All right. Okay, so now when I do the proof, let me go in a basis, but you can see from the proof that it will work in any basis. Yes?
Sorry, can you just explain what you mean by those two states are distinct topologically? Because, if you were to trace out even just one spin, you would get the same reduced density matrix, right?
Right. So what I mean is that in order to measure this phase, I need to need a non-local operator in order to measure this phase. But so the algebra is still not completely local. So this is the counterpart of the fact that, so you have to think in terms of algebra. To go from all up to all down, okay, to distinguish them, I need a local operator, right? I just measure the orientation, I just measure sigma z on one spin. And if I see it's up, I know that I'm in this state, if it's down, I know that it's in this state. But to flip it, I need a global operator that is sigma x everywhere. So the algebra is this long string of sigma x and then sigma z on one operator. So it's still not a completely topological algebra. Still local. Similarly, in this basis, it's the other way around. Sigma z, so the sigma z flips you from the state plus to the state minus. But in order to see the difference, you have to measure sigma, the long string of sigma x. So the fact that there is one element in the algebra that is large doesn't mean that the algebra is topological. The algebra is topological when all the elements in the algebra are non-local. Like in our case, it's this Wx and Wz. And the consequence is that the reduced density matrix in every basis is the same for every state which is in the base. Okay? So the density matrix is the same no matter what superposition, where I am in the ground space. Okay, so let's see. Okay, so what I want to do is to take my psi 0a, sorry, my psi 0, and trace out b. Okay? So first of all, so let me write trace over b. And let's write this density matrix. So you remember the expression for the ground state, right? This was 1 over square root of g, the superposition of all these string operators. Right? OK. So I have to trace over the density matrix associated to this. So I have 1 over g, sum of g, g prime in g. You agree that this is the density matrix. Now, notice that each of these g, so this is just a product of sigma xs operators around some loop or some many loops, but it's a product, right? So I can always write it like g on A tensor g on B. The only thing is that I do not have any guarantee that on A is still a loop and that on B is still a loop, right? Depends. So if this is A and my G is this, then this is GA, and the rest is GB. But it's still the product of these two things. Okay. So let me plug it on here. So let me write this as GAJ tensor GB G prime B. Okay? And now I want to take the trace. So my psi 0, 0, A. So now I want to take this trace. So trick. The trace is obtained by simply sandwiching this expression and transforming this cat bra in a bracket. So this is how you take the traces when you are in a basis. So this is 1 over g, the sum over g, g prime, and g. And now I have g a, g prime a, g b, g prime b. Or better, g prime b, g b. That's it. Okay. This is to take the trace. Now I want to see when these coefficients are different from zero. So these are inner products of sigma x operators, so that they can only be, or products of sigma x, they can only be 0 or 1. So we need to know when they are 1 and when they are 0. Okay, now the trick here is that here I am summing over a group, right? Look at the sum on g prime. So when you sum over all the elements of the group, this is the same as if you were summing over g tilde, that is g g prime. I can translate, right? If I add g here, that is invariant. That is the essence of summing over all the elements of the group. It's invariant under the group action. So if I do that, this becomes the sum over g, g tilde now, in g. And now here I have g tilde, which is g a, g prime a. And here we have g b, g prime b, g b. And I can relabel this as g prime. Okay, so because we are in the, these are all loops, right? They all commute. So gb can go through here and becomes gb squared, which is the identity. So I have the expectation value of g prime b. In what state? What is this base? This is the string base, right? I start from the state with all spins up and I flip when I go over it. So this is the expectation value in the state all spins up. Well, so you know, every time I flip something, then the expectation value in the state is zero. So the only way this is non-zero is when g prime b is the identity on b. So this means that now this sum, instead of being taken on the whole g, is taken on the g belonging to g, and the g prime belonging to the subgroup of g, such that On B, they are trivial. So let me write it in formula what I just said. It has to be taken on the subgroup of G such that G has the form is trivial on B. So this sum has to be taken on G. Now, look at this guy, the other one, G. I'm summing over all the G's belonging to G, but here I just look at the A part because I've done my trace. So this means that if in this sum, G, I have two elements that have this form, so let me call one, G1 is G1 on A and G1 on B. And this G tilde 1 is the same on A, but it's different on B. So I have both these things in the sum, right? Because I'm summing over all of them. But I don't see the difference. I have twice the same contribution. So I have as many contributions that are all the same as how many transformations I can do on B. And these are, by definition, those that I can do. Just let me write what I said. All the elements in G that act only on B. Right? Such that G is trivial on A and does something on B. So I can sum, so all the elements in here will give me the same contribution here. So let me take a representative. I sum, they're all equivalent. So I sum over the equivalence classes. So I sum over equivalent classes. And each of the equivalent classes will come with a multiplicity that is GB. Okay? All right. So this is the one for the zero. It is what it is. Now imagine that I want to compute the one for psi 0, 1a. No, so the one was up. So the ground state, but the other one. So this will be now the trace over B over W psi 0, 0, psi 0, 0, W dog. And they do exactly the same passages, okay? But now what happens? Let's see where is this W located with respect to our patch A. So two things can happen. The best case scenario is that our W doesn't touch A. So, but we don't like the best case scenario. So the worst case scenario is when it goes through A, right? You will see why this is the worst case scenario. So let me just say it is the worst case scenario. But now, if I, So my state psi 1 0 is W psi 0 0, right? Now do you agree that if I take some G tilde in G, then G tilde psi 1 0 is invariant? Right? This is the ground state. So no matter how many A and B operators I operate on them, and this is just the product of the operators, they do nothing. So when I have this state, I can write it like this as I want. Because this is just a gauge transformation. Our ground states are gauge invariant. It's a reminder of the fact that we are on the sum of these fluctuating strings. So I can always pull out one of them because I'm still summing over all of them. Mathematically, I'm summing over all the elements of the group. So it's like I'm using the trick over there. Okay, now remember what can a loop do. A loop can deform other loops. So let me graphically show you. This is my W. And then I have to pick my G tilde. And let me pick my G tilde in this way. Right? Because this is true for every G tilde. This is my G tilde. So here it cancels. So I can deform it as I want. And it's still the same expression. So guess what G tilde I take. Sometimes graphical proofs are nice. Okay, so I can always make it such that I know that W has only support in B. So there is no loss in generality of writing W as the identity on A, tensor WB. So when I take my trace here, let's do it. So I have 1 over G, G, G prime, and then I have G on A, G prime on A. And I don't have to worry about the W there because I know it's the identity there. Times G prime on B. W dagger B, WB, GB, this expectation. Oh, but these operators are unitary, or they square to the identity when they are Hermitian, they square to the identity. This is the identity. So they just disappear from the expression for the reduced density matrix. So you see that this expression is exactly this. I did all these other manipulations because I need them later. For this proof, I just need to stop here. So, proven, right? So because there are all these fluctuations, the only thing that matters about W is that it has some winding number, not where exactly it is. So as long as A is contractible, I can pull it up, right? But I wouldn't be able to pull it out if A had a shape like this. If it was a strip around the torus, and now I have my W, yeah, I can deform it as I want, but I cannot change this winding number around this ring. So then I would see it. But locally, they are completely indistinguishable. And now you see why it works in every basis. Because if you now compute the same thing in any superposition, you always get the same contribution. So point six is proven. Different ground states are locally completely indistinguishable. Yeah?
So when the tangent of a state doesn't change if I make local unitary transformations, right?
Right.
So, but in this case, it appears that I'm doing a global unitary transformation,
which
which is multiplying by W, let's say. If I change my state to W times the state, the property doesn't change.
No, but it is bilocal.
Oh, you mean, okay, you mean locality in A.
So when you say the entanglement doesn't change, so your colleague is saying this. If I have a state, psi AB, that belongs to the Hilbert space HA, H and so B. But this is not necessarily a product state. It's any state on here. If you do a unitary transformation, CAB, well, then the entanglement of this thing, of course, may change. Because, you know, the unitary transformations are exhaustive on the Hilbert space. I can go from any state to any other state. But if this unitary transformation has this this form that we call bilocal, and now this is a different notion of locale, just means that it's factorizable in this way. Okay? Then S of this new state is the same, whereas is the entanglement. So W is as this form. It's a product. Okay. So W in itself cannot change an entanglement. But a superposition of different states might. Because now the superposition doesn't have that form. However, I've just shown you that it doesn't if you look on a patch. So they are completely indistinguishable. Okay, now let's, point seven, where is it? The entanglement is long-ranged. What do I mean? What I mean is this. Okay, so we are almost done in computing our entanglement. So we were here, right? So now I can just do every calculation in this state that doesn't contain the W's, because the W's don't show up anyway. So we are over there. Okay. Exercise. So exercise in group theory, basically. Psi 0, 0 A square is equal to K psi 0. So it's proportional, the square is proportional to itself. So when an operator is proportional to its square, it means that it is proportional to a projector. Right? So this means that if it was a projector, it would have this form, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0. And the number of 1s that we have is the rank of this project. It's the dimension of the subspace on which I am projecting. But it is only proportional to projector, so it is like this. But now I know. But it is also a density matrix. So the trace of this is equal to 1. Which means that the rank must be 1 over k. Okay. The exercise, of course, consists in showing this and showing what is k. And K is GA times GB over G. So So now I know that my reduced density matrix, I've diagonalized it, you see? It is R times, always it's flat, the eigenvalues. It's k, 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 R times, 1 over k times, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. So what is the entropy of this probability distribution? Why it is a probability distribution? Because why the eigenvalues of the density matrix are the probabilities? Because it's a density matrix, right? So the population, the eigenvalues are the probabilities of being in a certain state, and the sum, so they must be positive, and the sum must be 1. It's because of the probabilistic interpretation of quantum mechanics that the density, the eigenvalues of the density matrix are the probability distribution. What is the entropy of this probability distribution? Is minus the sum pi log pi. Right? This is the Shannon entropy when these pi's are the eigenvalues of the reduced density matrix is called von Neumann entropy, and it's the measure of entanglement. So what is this? Well, it is, I have, this is k, and I have 1 over k of them that are all the same. So this is minus log k, or if you wish, log k to the minus 1, which is log of g over ga gb. So what I'm saying is that the entanglement is equal to the number, so the log is taking the number of generators of these groups. So it's the number of the generators of all the closed strings minus those that generate, those that do things in A and in B as a product. Because, as we just shown here, they cannot change the entanglement, so I have to take them out. So this is a sort of paradigmatic state to do the entanglement. It is just the sum of all the elements I have in my expansion minus those that do nothing. I mean, minus those that do transform the state, but in a way that the entanglement is not changing. So this is, in fact, the number of generators of that group GAB, that is just the quotient group of this one. So all those that are in G, but they do not cannot be factorized in this way. So let's make an example. If this is A and this is B, imagine that I have, this is my G. This has the form of something, a loop in A times a loop in B. So it is not in here. Right? Also, this has this form, because it's a loop in A times the identity on B, and the identity is a trivial loop. So the only ones that are in there are these. Those such that their part on A and their part on B separately are not loops. And who generates them? They are generated by the star operators that are on the near the boundary. Okay. So how many of them we have? L, I mean, the sides of the boundary of A. Are they all independent? So this is what we need to check. Let's see. If you take the product of all the these operators that belong to this boundary. Okay, so let's do it. So you see that all these spins in common, when they close, go away. And I'm only left with a part in A and a part in B. So the product of all of them is a loop inside A times a loop inside B. But this is in here. So it is not in our group delta to exclude them. So this thing is constrained, does not belong to GAB. So there are only DA minus one independent ones, because we have a global constraint on the boundary. So this is the perimeter law or boundary law for entanglement. We have just proven that the entanglement is equal to the sides of the boundary minus one. But this minus one comes from the fact that I have a global constraint on the boundary. So if I want to
log of that.
Huh?
Shouldn't it be the logarithm of that?
Yeah. I took the logarithm.
Number of generators.
There is one less generator, so the log of that is one. Okay? We're in base two.
Okay.
So if you want, I can write minus log two. That's one less generator in a base two. Yeah?
Can you explain more how the number of generators is related to the size of the group for finite groups? Like, how do you know that it's log?
Oh, yeah. Because our group, so in this case, because this is Z2, then G squared is the identity, right? So if I have G1, the identity G1, GK minus one, how many different products can I do of them? Two to the K. So that's one. So for different groups that do not have such a simple algebra, computing the order of a group can be much more complicated. But it doesn't change the essence. I will have some global, a set of global constraints on the boundary that give me some order one correction to the area law. To undo this thing here, I need to operate on the whole boundary, because it comes from a global constraint of the boundary. So if I have a perturbation that changes my state, and the perturbation is local, and A is big enough, I will not be able to see the effect of this perturbation on the law, on the global constraint. And this thing should stay constant. Why I said should? Because this very nature of thinking is extremely hard to prove. And nobody has proven it in generality yet. So we have some little proofs in some little examples that, which by the way always use the gauge constraint. So if you want to prove a theorem, and then show me the proof, then then we do the paper together. But you have then it goes on nature, because this is a very difficult proof to do. So what are the questions? Yeah.
So the logarithm of two there, that's, it seems that this is not a scaling law, right? It's just the result.
It's order one.
Okay, but, So this is irrespective of if I have the thermodynamic limit or not, right?
Yes. Where does the thermodynamic? So in the ground state of the toric code, there is no difference. What happens when I because the correlation length of the is exactly zero. When I switch on a perturbation, I introduce a correlation length. Things become a little fuzzier. So the interplays between how much my perturbation can affect physics, but it should only affect them at a length that is comparable with the correlation length, and the size of this boundary. And as long as the size of the boundary is much larger, this thing should not be affected. So now these are all nice words, but the proof is complicated.
I'm not sure if I'm, so isn't any star operator sprinkled in any way along the perimeter of that area also gonna contribute to this the size of this group?
Yeah.
So how did we take that into account when we wrote the absolute value of delta A? Do we mean that the log?
Yeah, so you have one such operators per unit of length. So the number, if you wish, I'm measuring the length in terms of the number of operators that are around it. But you have to subtract one. Yeah.
So this additive constant is something that's universal, right? So that's...
We believe it's universal.
So,
it's not proven.
Why not? I mean, that's the topological entanglement entropy for
this,
the toric code.
Yes.
But there's, there are proofs for that.
No. We do not have a proof that is universal.
But I mean, it only depends.
A rigorous proof.
But it only depends on the quantum dimension of the system.
Yeah, and how do we know that when you perturb the system, it still only depends on the quantum dimension?
Oh, okay. See, that's okay. Right.
So do you know that is universal? I mean, you can assume that it's universal and then everything follows. I mean, but it's circular. We have very good reasons, both theoretical and numerical, and in some cases, some proofs, in some cases. But we do not have a gen.
But
if you want, this is a mathematical physics concern. You want to be sure.
Sure, but so you said that if I introduce a perturbation, I'm introducing a correlation length, right? So as long as I have my subsystem A to be big enough compared to the correlation length, then, I think that one of the proofs of the topological entanglement entropy relies on that if you're in a region big enough compared to the correlation length, then you can always find this scaling law where that log of
I'm just saying it's not a proof.
What?
It's an argument. The thing is that entropy is not additive, right? You know,
sure.
you cannot, and sometimes you find weird counterexamples in which you have for instance finite correlation length, but you can find here that the entanglement between just two spins far away is still surviving. So you can construct counterexamples in which this type of reasoning based on correlation length fail. So how do you know that it's not fail? I'm not saying that it's failing here. I'm saying it's not proven. So there is this, yeah.
So it seems to me that we actually made heavy use of the fact that C2 is abelian when we actually went from the number of generators to actually taking the log of the size of the group. So when you're talking about non-abelian gauge theories, I assume that becomes a lot more complicated.
Yeah. But it's morally the same thing. It's still the dimensions of this. So the quantum dimension is the dimension of the local gauge. The total quantum dimension is the sum of the dimensions of all the particle excitations.
Okay.
So tomorrow we will see what happens when we try to do a quantum phase transition and what is the thermodynamics of topological order, so what happens at finite temperature. And then I had prepared two more lectures on the general problem of equilibration and thermalization in quantum statistical mechanics. And they are in the notes, but yeah, we lost one lecture and the other one, I don't know.